Welcome to ReFuture. Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to another episode
of ReFuture.
Of ReFuture. Wow.
All right, so I think we've had a pretty good ride so far with two episodes.
Yeah.
I think we're on our way
to predicting. It's been a smooth sailing so far.
Pretty interesting future.
Yeah.
So this week, without dragging it on for another 5 minutes, I think we've got a pretty interesting set of topics. Mm. So I'm talking about...
Oh, so you're going to go first?
No, I'm going first.
All right, let's hear this.
I got something you're going to want to hear. Mm. I'm talking about... space, the wide expanse
that, like, in general, or
not empty space, but space
where space travel,
Blue
space
Origins
exploration,
and NASA and SpaceX.
That's very interesting because I love space.
Have meetings about our fates.
Okay. So, what do we have for space today?
Obviously, I'm talking about the space that sits above our heads, where our planets and are orbiting the sun. And it's a very...
Are we really going to have this conversation?
Okay. So, have you ever wanted to volunteer for anything space research related? Is that something you've ever... I know some people think about, you know, maybe some days when they're 10 or so, maybe some days being able to work for NASA or a similar caliber space organization. Mm. Is that something you always...
Well, of course, my number one dream would be to actually go to outer space.
Okay.
Like, maybe not as an astronaut, but maybe like a civilian.
All right.
Which is basically what's happening. I would say it's still going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's still a long way.
No,
the future.
We're getting there.
Yeah. But in terms of working for space related stuff, I would say, yeah, that would be pretty interesting.
Okay.
Maybe collecting samples. Analyzing them, maybe even an admin job at NASA. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, maybe not so much. Have you heard of the Next Generation Transit Survey? Probably not.
Survey?
Yeah. Okay, Next Generation Transit Survey, NGTS.
From the name, it seems like they're mostly collect data from outer space.
So they're a wide-field photometric survey designed primarily to find and characterize transiting exoplanets.
Okay. What does exoplanet mean?
Yeah, so exoplanets are planets outside our solar system.
Cool.
And they're essentially a research organization. Now, like I said, you're not going to get something as exciting as working for NASA on the next lunar mission. Mm. But Next Generation Transit Survey, NGTS, are looking for help with large volume of data that their instrument has produced. What they essentially do is they scan large areas of the sky with a collection of small robotic telescopes to detect dips in stars' light that are caused by a planet passing between the stars and Earth.
Okay.
You lost. I lost you there, didn't I?
I mean, I'll try to understand it, but...
All right. So, what they're trying to do, essentially, is to search for exoplanets. Mm. Now, there are different ways of doing it, but one of the most successful ways of doing it is through transit methods.
Right.
In which a telescope repeatedly observes the amount of light originating from a star.
Okay, that
so
makes
you're,
sense.
You're monitoring, essentially, the light waves of a star. If a planet wanders in front of that star, the amount of light will dip slightly because you're obstructing. Mm. These dips have a very stereotypical shape if you plot them over time in what's called a light curve. Mm. With a fairly steep drop as the planet swings in front of the star, followed by a long flat reduction.
Oh.
You ever seen those charts
get? For fluctuations, right?
They scanned these and they find exoplanets using this method.
Using those data.
Yeah.
Okay, so they basically scanned all the stars that they can readily see outside of our solar system.
No, they monitor the lights originating from the stars.
Oh.
Yeah. And then using the data, because when a planet passes through, the data
they can calculate,
registers a dip. And using those dips, they can calculate, okay, this planet has passed through, so this is a planet.
Yeah.
And then they start, you know, characterizing them and finding out which one, if that's been observed before, or if that's some... So
it's very cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. There are other phenomena that can cause similar looking dips in a light curve, Plus, there are a bunch of factors that you need to take into consideration that could create noise that computers can have a hard time, you know, distinguishing for something else.
Mm.
Because science isn't absolute. There are a lot of different factors that can go into it, no matter how much you want to create a very regulated sandbox.
Yeah.
This is exactly what they need help with.
Mm.
They have a lot of this data that they've collected, raw data, but these computers have difficulty distinguishing a possible planet from various sources of noise.
Mm.
Like, it could be anything. It could be a planet,
mm.
which is the favorable outcome, but it could be anything else.
Okay, so for now, all the research and data that it pulled came from autonomous calculation from a computer.
Yeah, from their computers. Okay. So the researchers are now asking the general public to double check the computers and provide, you know, a final call on what nice. That signal is. Is yeah. it a planet? What is it? What else could it be? So that's something I found that could be really interesting. But that's not our main topic today.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Our topic is space research.
Okay.
So that's a small but footnote, significant yeah. contribution you could make. But what are the big guys doing? You know, what are the big organizations like NASA doing in space research? What are they focusing on? What's on the menu this month, week,
this generation,
year, yeah. decade, or even generation? Mm. Well, turns out even NASA pays attention to something else.
Really?
To focus their space research on.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Astrophysics and Astronomy Decadal Survey?
No.
Okay. Have you heard of the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine?
No.
Okay.
Probably because those are new entities?
No, they're not new entities. They have been doing this, I mean, at least a survey since the 1960s.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
The probable reason you don't know is because they're kind of based in the US and not a lot of people know about them. Their data is widely shared and used as far as I'm aware. Again, space researchers do not come for me. Mm. I am not an expert. But as far as I'm aware, their research is widely used.
Mm.
And that's what NASA uses to focus its efforts.
Nice.
So every year, every decade, actually, since the 1960s, teams of hundreds of experts led by a steering committee organized by the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine have produced massive reports aimed at recommending space exploration and research for the next 10 years and beyond. This is collated into a report called the Astrophysics and Astronomy Decadal Survey.
Okay. So what are they doing different than the other guys?
So no, NASA undertakes these missions and research projects.
Okay.
But they take their cues sometimes from this survey.
Okay.
Because the survey has a lot of academics and experts contributing to it. And likely they tell you what they think are going to be bigger themes to explore for the next coming years, depending on everything we've had so far. They're doing, like, there's a team behind this that's doing their legwork for you.
Mm.
It's pretty nice to have that to build upon.
Yeah.
This year's survey, officially called Pathways to Discovery in Astronomy and Astrophysics for the 2020s, was released. It's been dubbed Astro 2020 for short.
Great name.
Yeah. So it was due last year, but obviously the pandemic kind of off-railed everything, including the report. So approximately 150 scientists made up 30 panels focusing on topics like cosmology, galaxies, stars, particle physics, and the state of the profession in general.
Mm.
To complete the survey, they pored over nearly 900 white papers submitted by researchers from around the globe and completed hundreds of hours of Zoom meetings, which is a feat in itself.
Yeah, that's the most important part of this story.
A group supervisor at NASA state how important the work that the scientists do really is.
Mm.
Because what they decide affects what scientists will do.
Okay.
A decadal survey typically calls for specific large and medium-sized missions at certain budgets. Now, apparently the NASA has $23 billion.
Wow.
Just for 2021 for research projects.
For research, yeah. That is a lot of money.
That is a lot of money, yep. So knowing where it goes is probably a good starting point for them. And it's really important because projects get funded or not based on what's in the survey sometimes.
Okay.
Okay, so this 500-plus page report prioritizes three scientific areas. Hunting for habitable exoplanets, like we discussed. Those are planets outside our solar system.
Yeah.
probing the beginnings of the universe and studying gases to understand the evolution of galaxies. So within these categories, obviously, there are different subcategories, which are essentially the missions that they can undertake. These include creating a large infrared optical or ultraviolet space telescope, funding far infrared and X-ray missions, the continued growth of important ground-based astronomy assets, a steady drumbeat of smaller probe-class missions, and an increased investment in the equity of the field.
Okay.
Yeah. It also recommends revolutionizing the way major missions protocols mature into realized projects. You expand them to fit bigger projects.
Yeah.
By creating $1 billion-plus program that would shepherd concepts from their early stages to help make sure that they're delivered on time and on budget. Something I really want to highlight is the fact that we just discussed this survey could essentially green light certain missions and red light the other ones, right? It's essentially the trendsetter for space research. And if you really want to observe the impact this has had, the surveys from 1960s to the 90s laid the groundwork for the Hubble Space Telescope, the Compton Gamma Ray Observatory, the Chandra X-ray Observatory, and the Spitzer Space Telescope. Out of all of those, I know the Hubble Space Telescope is a big deal.
Was a big deal, yeah.
And for decades, these exact telescopes and observatories have sent us images and seas of information from deep space about black holes, planets, and much, much more. The other reason why they focused on protocols and making them realize for bigger budgeted projects is because apparently the projects, while important and providing really key information, also kind of have a reputation for running late and over budget. So
I mean, that's true for most things.
Yeah, I mean, bureaucracy is a pretty big beast. They're thinking it's high time that they focus on making these missions both cost effective and just time effective. They're run more efficiently, on time, on budget, and that all these innovations that we can have can't be a decade long endeavor.
Yeah.
It can be something that just drags on for a decade for bureaucratic reasons.
I would say most of the roadblock that these researchers faces are bureaucratic reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just funding in itself.
No, I mean, I understand, because the larger a project is, or the higher the stakes are for it, you kind of need to sign off from as many levels of whichever organization it is to make sure everyone is covered.
True.
I understand there's a risk factor involved, and that's what makes people want more levels of bureaucracy to make sure it's... I mean, you look at any organization, whether that's government, whether that's corporate, whether that's... You know, you need to... Sometimes you need approvals all the way from either the CEO or the president or whatever that is
to get something. Thing,
I understand where that comes from, but we also need to find more efficient ways of doing it.
True.
Right?
Well, especially like if I would say the stigma or like the impression of actually studying and going to outer space is kind of on the negative side nowadays.
Because
it sounds like a waste of money.
No, it's true, because our priorities have shifted. I mean, pre-pandemic, there was always concerns about whether NASA's big budget is justified.
Yeah, exactly.
And post-pandemic, even more so, because much of the planet is still recovering from the setback that the pandemic produced. We're still in recovery phase. We haven't passed that. We're not in a post-pandemic period yet. So I understand where those concerns are coming from. But I don't know. It's going to be an ever running debate with whether we should focus on space exploration. And then sometimes that debate also extends to whether we should focus on science exploration at all.
Yeah.
Or should we just stick to making what we have better?
Because not all research produce results.
No. Right? But that's if you don't have the trial and error method that we have right now.
True. Nothing will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's science, dude. A/B testing.
That is science. So that's what it looks like for the next decade. These are the things we're focusing on.
Okay, out of the three that you mentioned, which excites you the most? Because for me, it will be the exoplanets.
Yeah, I think the exoplanets too. I think I've always been fascinated by what could be out there. I think there's a very famous internet quote. I don't know if it's said by someone or if it's just made its way around and anonymously. You've probably heard of it.
Sure.
It's either we're alone in this galaxy or we're not.
Okay.
Both are equally terrifying.
True, true. I would say I believe that we just haven't been discovered, or we just haven't discovered anything yet.
It could be that we're still searching. I mean, when you think about the scale of what the universe could potentially include, we are just one galaxy. We're just one solar system that we know of, and we're so complicated.
True. Imagine
the complications that come with having, I don't even know how many more of these around. And how would you even communicate? We had billions of years of the Earth existing before we came along.
Then
we've had a couple thousand years of us existing.
Yeah.
We still haven't reached that point yet. We don't know whether there, whatever other living sources out there is at that point or beyond. So
true.
There's a lot of ifs, knowns, and
it is very interesting. Yeah. And it makes you really excited or even scared of what we'll find out there. You know?
But I'm excited for the next decade.
Nice. So is this your official statement to join this survey team?
I would say if that's in something that interests you, definitely. I don't think I have the skills for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at a chart and go.
Yeah, just look at charts all day.
That one's a dip, but I'm not really sure if that's a planet. I'm going to say that's just a dip.
It's all
by the dip.
Yeah. It's like all multiple choice, yes or no. And you're just like, I don't know. It depends.
We're back.
So
what do you have for us, Albert?
Tell me
it's more interesting than
that's
space.
That's my turn. I mean, space is pretty interesting, but virtual space is much more entertaining.
Oh, really? Yeah. Can't wait for you to sell me on this one.
Okay, so my topic for today will be about VTubers. And I wrote here on my notes.
What is that?
Okay. I'll divide it into three parts.
Okay.
What they are, how they do it, and what's their purpose in society.
All right. So they have a purpose in society.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you'll be surprised.
Okay, all right.
I titled this one as VTubers, the Rise of Puppet Entertainers.
You feel really proud of yourself, don't you?
Okay.
Okay.
To give you more context, so what are they? Where did they come from? So VTubers stands for virtual YouTubers. They don't have to be YouTubers necessarily, but that's what stuck as their official or unofficial name. They are an online entertainer who uses a virtual avatar generated using the computer or motion capture software and technology. So you can do it both ways, or you can do it in two ways, actually. It originated in Japan, of course, in the mid-2010s.
Oh, okay, so it's not new.
It's not new, but it's slowly creeping into the West.
Okay.
Because as of the past 5 or 6 years, it mostly stayed in the Asian markets and the Asian audience. And only now it's, you know, gradually transitioning into a more English-speaking industry.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, since it's from Japan, most of these character uses anime-inspired avatar design. And of course, at least majority of VTubers today are Japanese speaking YouTubers or live streamers. And you know, top VTubers have millions of followers and earn hundreds of thousands of dollars each month from different platforms. So you have Twitch, which is a very popular live streaming platform, YouTube, of course, Nico Nico, which is a Japanese live streaming platform, and for our Chinese people out there, Bilibili.
Yeah, of course. I know Bilibili.
Yeah. So, question number one, how do they do it? How do they make an avatar? So, there are two ways, like I said earlier. One is you animate it yourself, or you use motion capture.
Okay.
So, for the technology, for the first one, there are two really popular ones. So, there's Vroid, which is this 3D character creation software with a variety of customizable options. So think of it like a game, and then you basically just create your own character down to like the very minuscule detail. So if you want to have like a double tuxedo, you can do it. And then once you make your own character, you can rig it to your, let's say, streaming device or streaming setup, and then you can use the preset animations to make it move. So again, it's like it's like your own puppet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So think of your favorite streamer, but in cartoon. That's what basically what a VTuber is. And for some reason, it's really entertaining. There's a market for this.
I mean, look at Memojis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People love it.
True, but to the next level.
Yeah.
Like you actually see their daily lives. They have their own inside jokes. They have their own routines. They partner with other people and they have this circle of friends. And if you really want to deep dive into it.
Let me get this right.
Mm.
Are these entirely different characters created solely for this purpose? Or are these people putting on these suits
It's a bit of both.
Okay.
So for example, there's a person who wants to entertain by playing games, but doesn't really want to show his or her face.
Yeah.
He can create his own persona.
Okay. All right. You know,
he might be like this, he might create an anime avatar from New Zealand, for example. Yeah, I'm from New Zealand. They have their own backstory and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from New Zealand, I have Japanese and I play games, you know, and that's their whole shtick.
Okay.
Basically creating your own persona and then, you know, creating a community out of that.
Okay.
So that's one software. And then the other one is Live 2D, which is a 2D animation software that you can create out of any illustration that you have. So the first one was 3D. This one's 2D. So if you have a drawing of your preferred avatar, you can scan that and then just rig that up and then it can make it, you can animate it to your own choosing. So which is pretty common because these are the most inexpensive way to become a VTuber. And then the next one is mostly like the advanced kinds, which is motion capture. Mm-hmm. So you need to have your own, you know, bodysuit if you really wanted to track you and make it more immersive, make it more lifelike. There are some really popular Twitch streamers that does this. I forgot her name, but Miko something, which she basically created her own game level and then put on a bodysuit and then just streamed from there, which is insane to think about.
She navigated.
Yeah, she has her own 3D space.
Okay.
And then she puts on a bodysuit. And then, yeah, she just basically streamed from that world. And then she can play around with it like, oh, I want a mansion now. And then just click on something and just instantly transport into a mansion. It's so entertaining. But it's so weird to think about, right?
I mean, it's the same thing as we had last time around where we were talking about we are.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
From our first episode.
Exactly, exactly.
We were talking about we are and how lifelike it's becoming or how the quality is increasing to a point where you could have a bunch of people in a room.
True.
Just putting on headsets.
It kind of raises a question and blurs the line. Is this actually entertainment? You know, because everything's all, I wouldn't say fake, but everything is under another layer. Because it's easy to say like, oh, I'm following my favorite streamer. I can see his face. I can see his personality. But when you add another layer to that, another avatar, then that's a whole nother level.
I mean, I don't know why people follow streamers, but it could be because of the way they look. But it could also be because of the content or the feedback or commentary that they're providing.
Is. Yeah.
And I guess adding a layer of we are mask on top of it or whatever type of digital mask on top of it of a weird, funny character that you can customize at the drop of a hat. Like you could just go, okay, you know what? I'm feeling a little funny today. I'm going to put a clown face on. Like, I understand that's actually kind of appealing.
It's kind of appealing, yeah.
Like you could play Five Nights at Freddy's with a clown mask on.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be funny.
Yeah. And the added, I'm a bit biased, but anime characters in general are really popular. So it adds more value than showing your face, I would say. You know, because we see these top Twitch streamers and you say, oh, I can basically do that, but it's not that easy to be like the top 100 let's say Twitch or YouTube streamer in the world.
It's not, but yeah.
But if you put an anime face on it, then that's a bit different, right? You can make
whatever
your own
makes
personality
you stand out.
exactly. And this is not that new in Asian markets because it's been here for a while, but it's definitely new in the West.
I know with Chinese streamers, I've seen the videos where they're able to put filters on their face, which effectively masks a lot of the prominent features of their faces. So I guess this is just the next step from that.
It is the next step. And going to my third point, which is what purpose do they serve in society?
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Okay.
But basically, they're your next generation of influencers. Yeah. Especially, this is especially true in East Asian market because they heavily market popular VTubers or Vocaloids, which is another like whole nother rabbit hole to fall into. But basically, once you have like, once you're really popular enough, certain companies would reach out to you to promote their items. But think about it. You create this digital persona, create this community, and now you're getting paid for it, which is insane to think about, right?
Yeah.
So there's this really popular VTuber in Japan called Kizuna AI, which in 2016, when she launched, she is basically just managed by one company. And she got really popular that they built an entire conglomerate
empire around
this persona, not even a person, a persona. Mm. And she's basically like one of the first AI entertainers in the world. So like, it's crazy to think about. Like,
wait, so behind her, is it entirely AI or are there human operators, I guess?
There is. Once the company was built around this persona, the voice actress was revealed.
Okay, so there is a voice actress.
There is a voice actress, yeah. But obviously the type of content was written by a team. And then, you know, the schedule and
so
all that.
So it's not fully automated or it's not just the way that keeps going. Okay, but
not yet.
But okay, at the very least, the physical or visual persona is, okay.
Yeah, true. So
Black Mirror episode bit, downloading in 3, 2.
Yeah, it's crazy. So in terms of marketing and influencer marketing, so VTubers like other YouTubers create a wide range of contents. Some play video games, model clothes, share their thoughts on political situation. Yes, this exists. Review movies or even release their own music videos. I've seen a lot of popular VTubers start from small. And then once you tune back again 3-6 months later, they have their own like music videos. They have their own merch. They have their own subreddits, which is really mind-blowing if you think about it.
You know what? It feels like another plane of existence.
Yeah,
you've got your in real life,
yeah,
you know, your actual physical life,
yeah,
and then you've got your digital life now. But now there's a third level of like purely digital, nothing,
yeah,
no connection to anything
exactly
physical. You can an entire new economy of sorts.
True, exactly. And I think the one scary part about this, because when I was researching this, when you build a community around this persona, there's a certain level of anonymity.
Yeah.
Anonymity.
Yeah.
That comes with it because you don't want to reveal yourself.
Yeah.
Like who's behind the camera. Because once you do, the magic is lost.
Yeah.
I would say. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, so it's this person. So I don't see this VTuber the same way anymore because I know who you are behind that mask. So there's that level of security that they need to maintain every day they stream. And they are,
and also not reveal anything that's too personal,
yes,
or could
exactly
give away their location, anything.
Yeah.
Yep.
And mind you, like most of the popular VTuber in Asia and in the Western market are managed by PR companies. So if you say something wrong, then
damage control.
Yeah, you're basically treated as, I would say, a C-list celebrity online. So, which is crazy to think about.
No, but I'm also getting visuals of a VCon.
Yeah.
Down the line.
Yeah.
Where they just have all these VR personalities come on. We just put our headsets on.
Yeah, true.
We're there.
They're not actually there. And then
no,
you just sit in this room. Yeah. But they do. And one of the most popular company that manages these VTubers is called HoloLive.
It's fitting.
First started in Japan. And now a transition into the Western market.
I think we need to move to Japan.
Yeah, they have some crazy tech there.
I'm a little concerned, but I also want to see.
Yeah. I don't know. Like innovation always starts from Japan. I mean, the crazy ones, right?
The ones on the edges.
Yeah. Like things you've never even thought about.
but could be possible. It's an interesting look. It's an interesting concept. I'm not gonna.
It is. It is
entertaining. I think it depends on your personal preferences, but
true.
I would like to see it at the very least, see what this entails, what it looks like, how they're interacting with audiences, how they're engaging, how are they monetizing this?
True. I would say they're more similar to YouTubers in terms of monetization and content. Mm-hmm. It's just an anime character. That's the only difference. Mm. It's just an anime character. But still, it's a bit different. Okay. I understand because it's fairly new. Especially from a casual viewer, it's like, what is this? Why are you watching this, right? It's weird. But
I mean, look, if you can watch a streamer for 4 or 5 hours a day.
Yeah. What's stopping you from watching a cute anime girl do the same thing?
Which is disturbing, but yes.
Yeah, true. And yeah, people get paid for this. So many partners with brands to promote products and services. Another example is, again, Kizuna AI, who partnered with the Japan National Tourism Organization to help attract U.S. citizens to come to Japan.
Isn't like, it already being done because of
anime and
stuff?
I mean, this is the next level.
Okay,
yeah?
All right.
It's like, oh, come to Japan. We have this. And it's just crazy to think about that. The landscape of influencer marketing in the digital side or in the streaming side is about to is gonna shift into this, you know, anonymous personas that's happening now. Mm. Anyone can be a VTuber. It's so easy. It's so accessible. And
what I'm hearing is you already signed up, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. It's time for a career change.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, but. But yeah, it's crazy. It's blurring the lines between, you know, cartoons and real life, I would say.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the future looks bright for all of us. Yeah. I said space, you said VTubers.
VTubers, yeah.
So
they're both in space. Virtual space.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's it for today. I think we've covered quite a bit. We've covered space. We covered, like you said, VTubers. We've covered what the future could look like in a disturbing Black Mirror episode.
Mm.
So, Albert, if they want to find out more about us, where can they go?
Yeah, you can. If you want to listen to more of our episodes, you can find us in all podcast platforms that you listen to or at anchor.fm/refuturepod. That's Refuture POD.
Yeah. And for any updates, oh, and our new thing called Find of the Week.
Oh, yes. Yes. So on our Instagram at instagram.com/refuturepod, every week we share interesting stuff that we've found.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be related to the episodes that we released that week.
Yeah, just some internet find of the week. It could be a subreddit. That's a weird subreddit. It could be a video, a meme. It could be just some news that we thought we could share. But it's a very interesting internet find that we wanted to highlight. And also, we welcome submissions. So if anyone has any idea, please reach out to us at...
instagram.com/refuturepod. Exactly. That's refuturepod. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that's,
yeah. Yeah, that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. If you made it all the way here, we appreciate you.
We'll join you in the future.
Yeah. See you tomorrow.
See you in the future.
See you in the future.
Okay. I'm about to go make my avatar.
Nice.
What is?
Yeah, we should make a special episode. It's just us in VTuber form.
In VTuber form? Yeah. Visual. Like our visual podcast episode.
Yeah, we'll release it on YouTube.
And we're partnering with Subway.
Yeah. This episode is sponsored by
Subway.